You're listening to a CNA podcast.
What is the point of having appraisals? Of course we do it because it's linked so much to compensation, to reward, to retention.
You as a boss, what do you hope to hear or not hear at a performance review?
At the top of my list is I value honesty and I value feedback.
How would you prepare yourself to give negative feedback?
Can I just say that that is one of the toughest things to do. Hello everyone, it's Crispina here and I've got some important news to share with you. Starting from this episode, Adrian and I will be handing over the hosting reins to two new voices.
Hey there, Work It listeners. This is Tiffany Ang. So a quick introduction. I'm an editor on the CNA podcast team. And if you are an avid CNA podcast listener, you'll probably find my voice a little bit familiar because I'm on the Money Talks podcast and I also present some of our narrative shows.
And I'm Gerald Tan. I'm a career counsellor with Avoda People Solutions. And in my job, I get to listen and hear from so many different people. And I'm really excited to be here to be listening and hearing from our invited guests and trying to unpack their stories and present them to all of you listeners.
But today the invited guest is me.
Yes,
so the tables
actually,
are turned today.
But because we have Gerald on this new refreshed show, we've decided to also introduce a new segment in this Work It podcast that we will actually have at the end of the main discussion. Think of it as an AMA, Ask Me Anything. So each week I'll pick a work-related question and put Gerald on the hot seat. So if you have a burning question that you'd like to know from a career coach, this is your chance. Send it to us on any of our social media channels or write to us at cnapodcasts@mediacorp.com.sg and I'll ask them for you. This week's question is about how to set healthy boundaries if your boss is also your friend. So you definitely want some advice from Gerald later on in the podcast.
Now, before we get into the full conversation, I just want to ask for a quick favor. If you haven't already followed us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, do hit the subscribe button because that way you get an alert when a new episode drops.
Yeah, and earlier on, Crispina said the tables are turned, right? And it's true because today she is our first guest. We want to ask the question, how do you prepare for your performance review? Incidentally, Crispina is my boss, so she's here to tell us what she appreciates when she's having that performance chat with me.
It's quite funny because when Tiffany, you know, was sending me the brief about what she was going to talk about and ask if that I had a, you know, experience with a bad performance.
Yes, performer. Your team or having to deliver a bad performance review.
And I couldn't think of one. I generally feel that most of my chats as someone who has been managed and someone who is managing people have been okay. You know, nothing acrimonious. Nobody threw a shoe at me.
Yet. Well, I think one of the questions Gerald was also wondering as well is why are we doing this chat now, right?
Yep, exactly. Although we are crossing into the second quarter, it still feels very early to be doing a performance, a review or appraisal. So wouldn't it be great if our listeners actually had more time to prepare in the lead up to that conversation they have? Right? Wouldn't it be great if they had some insights, some more learnings around this topic? And of course, we're not forgetting that performance appraisals don't happen at the end of the year.
Yes.
Very often they start in the middle of the year. Yeah. In fact, some companies, they want to have quarterly coffee conversations as much as possible.
Regardless of when it starts, like Gerald says, it's very important because everybody needs to go through a performance review if you're full-time staff. Because that way, you basically can go through with your boss if some of the KPIs that you have set, have you met these KPIs? Have you exceeded these KPIs and what are areas you can work on, right? But I guess the first question I have is, what is the point of having appraisals? I talked very briefly about KPIs, your key performance indicators, but some people just feel it's rubber stamping. I just say met expectations on the performance appraisal form. Is that it?
Okay, so I have to be honest, right? I kind of have skepticism about appraisals. And I have to caveat this heavily because I've always worked for a big organization. So no matter how well you do or how averagely you do, there's still a common pot, right? There are some challenges when it comes to promoting a whole bunch of people, etc., etc. But my approach to things is always to say, let's do our best. I know everybody wants to meet certain KPIs. If I've done 5 out of 5, great. And then I leave it to the management or my bosses to say, okay, yeah, with space to give you something more, with space to promote to staff, etc. If it were up to me, I would promote everybody, right? This is why I don't run a company, because I'll run it to the ground.
Everyone's, you get a promotion, you get a promotion.
I would be Oprah. But in reality, that's not true, right, Gerald? So the why is not so straightforward. Of course we do it because it's linked so much to compensation, to reward, to retention, but it can get quite muddled along the way.
Yeah, for sure. We often see that's the obvious part of the appraisals, the reviews. It's like a ruler that we want to be measured according to. But there's so much more to that. There's a part of it that's about the growth and the potential. Finding out like what are the areas that you could be doing better at. Also, maybe take the time to build a better relationship with your boss.
Mm. Yes.
We always do these conversations maybe over coffee, over a more personal session. Maybe we don't get much time for bosses. So this is a really great time to build that relationship too. In my opinion, there's multiple benefits of doing performance appraisals.
Yeah.
That's the next question I want to ask is, how do you step into this chat where you can take the wheel? You want to be able to tell your boss what you have done, right? So how, Crispina, would, let's say, for example, someone in your staff, what should they prepare for before they step into this chat with you?
Oh, this is a loaded question. She's going to talk to you, know.
let's caveat that I am not in this for any, you know, self-interest.
Okay. So I'm speaking from the manager point of view, right? Gerald, you please jump in because I'm sure you manage people as well. So when somebody comes to the chat, I've had experiences where people come in and they just tell me, you just tell me whatever lah. I don't care. And I think that's a little bit of a pity because it feels as if they were not invested in this conversation. That's one. And then, of course, ideally, you have someone who comes prepared. And what I mean by prepared is, you see, in the day-to-day bustle of life, your boss has 101 things to manage, right? Different stakeholders, different things. So sometimes it's not possible to keep track of everybody's highlights, everybody's lowlights. It's not possible. I don't have a ledger.
Yeah.
So if you have your own ledger, you know, that works, right? Then you tell me, hey, you know what? I did this, you know, so that I remember, oh, yeah, that's a good point. You know, so you are advocating for yourself and you're helping me to do it.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a very practical perspective because we all know that bosses, they manage so many people, they're so busy. It's really hard to keep track of everybody's work. So this appraisal, this review is really a good chance for everyone to kind of bring up what you have done well in, what you felt you're good at doing.
Yeah.
And even for me, when I was having direct reports, I try to allocate maybe some time, maybe 50% of the time to talk about the work that's done. And then I'll spend some time to talk about some work that needs to be done in future. Okay.
Yeah. I see. So that's the growth areas that you were talking about.
Yeah.
I guess, Crispy, when you were talking about being a manager, right, from a manager's point of view, I think it's easy when you're managing a very small team. Let's say you have only five people.
Exactly.
You want to have this heart-to-heart conversation with them, HTHT a little bit. But when you have to meet, let's say, 25 people or 30 people in your team, and HR tells you, you have 1 week to complete this appraisal process, won't you appreciate if somebody says, just tell me what to do, right? Ah, yeah, it's you again. Would you appreciate that it's like a carousel, like sushi conveyor belt?
Absolutely. Thank God I'm not in the conveyor belt because I've seen bosses who were in the conveyor belt and they literally only have 15 minutes for each person.
Yeah.
So in that sense, it's very, very cut and dry. It's like, okay, here's the good stuff.
Yeah.
Here's the stuff I would have liked you to do more of, but you didn't. Do you have any questions? And that's it. Done. That's it. Move on. But it happens. Yeah. So it's okay. It's okay. We take what we can, right?
Yeah. I've seen how bosses, during the appraisal period, they're like, here we go again, you know?
Yeah.
Another conversation. And then people just going in and out of the rooms.
Oh, yeah. Like seeing the doctor.
Yeah, like seeing the doctor, right? And then if it's taking place at the end of the year, they say, I can't take my leave. I must finish all these appraisals before I go for my leave.
Oh, so they complain about it. And obviously, their staff hears it, right? And then it demotivates them to make this a very constructive session.
Yeah. And I like what Crispy said, right? Sometimes you just have that 15 minutes to really be very direct with what's happening and what needs to be improved. And that's all that the staff gets, you know.
Yeah.
And I must also say that there are some companies, maybe some smaller companies, that they don't have the practice of doing appraisals at all.
Okay.
All right. Because they maybe work so closely together, they kind of know what's happening already. These things get maybe discussed on a daily basis. on a regular basis. Yeah. So they're really, really different situations depending on the size, the culture of the company.
So what about you as a boss? What do you hope to hear or not hear at a performance review?
At the top of my list is I value honesty and I value feedback. Basically, that's it. I'll tell you a very interesting story. So many years ago, I was a staff, very young, and had a lot of complaints from people who he was working with, cut corners a lot. And basically, just one of your guys who would not get a good rating, okay? I was his reporting officer and I had to talk to him about it. And I started by saying, these are some of the things that have come up, right? And to my great surprise, because I approached it like, hey, what's going on, man?
You try to keep it casual first.
I'm genuinely curious. Are you not interested in this job? And to my great surprise, the guy admitted. He was like,
okay.
Very self-aware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was like, yeah, I know that.
I hope he didn't leave it as that. Knowing is one thing. Did he change after that?
Not really.
I think he was trying to make Crispy feel better because I could see that as she was trying to think about how to break the news or the information, she was like so uncomfortable. Let's put her out of her misery. I'll just tell her I know the problem.
Yeah. To his credit, he was very cool about it. You know, he wasn't defensive. Some people might be defensive and they'll be like upset. I've never had anybody cry. Thank God. I know some people, like colleagues who were also reporting officers, telling somebody this was not well done, the feedback was not great, and then they're like, very emotional.
One thing I often hear from people, and I want to pose this question to Crispina, right? How would you prepare yourself to give negative feedback, you know, some correction that needs to be done? Because this is something I often hear from especially new managers. How do I help my colleagues, my direct reports improve? There are certain areas I see, maybe we used to be peers, and then now they're reporting to me, so how do I get that conversation out?
Can I just say that is one of the toughest things to do, especially if it's somebody you've known for a while and a friend at work. I don't know. How do you do it? I take the approach that everybody is trying their best. So that's my starting point.
Wow, you see the best in people.
I try, la. I haven't come across somebody who is intentionally like terrible.
Yeah.
I think I would not have patience for that kind of thing. And if I saw that, then I think I'll call it out. I'll be like, look, this is just not acceptable. And here's why.
But if, let's say, you are a new manager and you are finding it very difficult to have that difficult conversation, I mean, what sort of advice would you give them, Gerald?
Yeah. Even for me, I think I agree with what Crispina said, right? It's really very difficult. I think we have to be human about it. At the same time, be as objective about it as possible.
Yeah.
One of the things that I often try to do is to really put aside the emotions or the perception that I might have of a certain behavior and to really just write down what needs to be changed, right? Write it down objectively and then start to have that conversation with the person. If it's a close friend, then we should use it to our advantage, right? Because there's a relationship already.
Yeah.
And then there's a trust, right? It starts with trust.
And just letting the person know that, hey, you know, you have to wear the hat of the boss now.
Okay.
And then you got to carry out your duties responsibly. And this is part of the package, you know, that you agreed when you became a manager. And it's about being objective about your feedback, encouraging the person as well at the start, before giving the feedback, and after giving the feedback as well. I think what people want to hear is not like, okay, you screwed up, you did this thing wrong, so go sort it out. But I think the last part is really important for the managers to step in to say, I'm here with you. This thing is a shared success, right? If you succeed, I also look good. So let's work on this together. Let's work on this issue and I'll support you in any area that you need.
Yeah. And just to add on to that, for example, let's say you have a very young staff who keeps taking leave or medical leave, and of course, they have many valid reasons, a family emergency, blah, blah, blah. But it's in a production cycle, so it affects other people. As a boss, I think one thing that usually helps is to help the staff see the impact of their behavior on work.
And the rest of the team.
Mm. So it's a data-driven thing. So when you do
stick to the facts, basically.
Stick to the facts.
Okay.
When you do this, this is what has to happen behind you, which you're not aware of. I have to activate this person, I have to do this, I have to do this. So there's a domino effect to behavior, right? So data or evidence is useful.
And I think we have to deliver the feedback because it's part of our job as managers to do so. But sometimes the change doesn't happen, and we don't have to take it on ourselves as well, because people, we have lives outside of work. There are maybe other things happening. So yeah, we just do our best to lay down the expectations, what's expected, because we have to take care of other people as well. There's a culture that we have to maintain. There's a certain perception that the other people are looking in this conversation, like, how is this going to affect me? Right.
But let's say, for example, we are at this point where, Crispina, you give the feedback and you are very data-driven. You stick to the facts, thinking that this person will accept it. However, this person decides, I disagree with you. And short of flipping the tables and cursing and swearing in the room, what happens when the conversation takes a downhill slide? A lot of us might either clam up and just go, okay, you're not going to listen to me anyway.
Yeah.
Or I get defensive. What should we do next? How do we finish up that conversation and continue to work and things don't turn awkward?
Okay, so I've not been in that situation where things are acrimonious. People are like really angry with me. If they're angry, they're angry with the company. And so there's a distinction between the two of us.
So you have to first remind yourself, don't take it personally. Don't take it personally. It's not me, it's them.
Also, if you come from a position that, okay, if I were in this guy's shoes, right? What is he seeing that I'm not seeing? Why is he so frustrated, etc.? Okay. It's not easy, of course. I have been in like conversation where the person just clammed up. Doesn't want to say anymore. And there's nothing I can do. Unfortunately, if it sours the relationship at work, then I have to deal with it lah.
Yeah. And that person has to deal with it as well, because you still are a boss.
No.
Because I think even hearing from other people's stories on this matter, right, I do see the other side of it, where the employee, the worker, right, gets the feedback and they feel it's unjustified.
Yes.
But they just don't want to respond to it.
Yeah.
And they just clam up, and that's their response.
That's like, their coping, right?
That's their coping, just maybe they don't know how to deal with it, or they feel upset about it and they don't want to respond, and they look like they don't understand or even look standoffish, but they're still processing. They're still processing certain things.
See, this is a good point.
Yeah.
See, that makes me understand why this person clammed up.
Yeah, and shut down. They may not be actually shutting down. Yeah. They may still be processing.
Yeah.
And it could take a long time for them to process.
You see, if you were talking to me and if you, let's say, Gerald, you're my boss, you gave me some bad feedback, you say, you know, very callous, etc. I'm the sort who would fight back, right? Mm-hmm. I'm the sort who would say, oh, but these were some of the circumstances, blah, 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 something like that. But there are some people who would not.
Yeah.
It's just their nature.
Yeah. It's possible that they would take some time and then they will write back. They might write an email, they ask for another conversation. So as a manager, it's important to keep that door open.
Okay.
Or even maybe a few days later, if you see that there's a change in the behavior since that feedback, you might want to go back to the person and say, let's have a talk, you know, tell me how you're processing this.
Oh.
And sometimes if it gets to the point that the person doesn't want to talk to you, I don't know whether maybe a third party might be needed.
Yeah, so I was going to say that in very contentious situations, I think neutral third party, whether it's a HR or the next level reporting officer, might be good to sit in. And the last thing I would say about that is that it should not come as a shock, I feel.
Okay.
That somebody is not doing well, or that your rating is going to be low or whatever. I think that's not fair to the person. Something I learned actually along the way, that I think people should be preempted. This is why this year is not going to be a good rating for you. And explain that early, you know, rather than at the end of the year when it's time to fill in the forms in HR. And then they see the rating and they're like, what the heck happened here?
Yeah.
They want just one transparency. People just want to know.
Yeah.
And they also want consistency as well. You can't be saying good job every day, right? And then right at the end, you give them a very bad rating.
They were telling me good job
the whole year. And then now at the end, you're telling me that I need to improve.
Yeah.
Something doesn't connect.
Yes. Yeah.
Which I think brings us back to the start of this conversation, when Gerald also reminded us that a lot of people, a lot of companies do regular check-ins, make sure they have these quarterly coffee checks.
Yeah.
So that you don't wait till the end of the year.
But you see, the check-ins cannot be, hey, how are you? Oh, very good job, well done. So those chats, while frequent, need to be intentional too.
Okay.
Towards the final goal.
It has to be specific. It has to be specific to a certain point, to a certain project, helping the person to see how this feedback is not just given loosely.
Yeah.
Like, everybody gets a good. So what does this mean? It doesn't mean anything. You're just going around saying good to everybody. But really being specific about what have you done well, maybe even in a written form for some people. Right? Yep. This is part of leadership and people management. Mm. It's about recognizing your people, letting them know how they're contributing every day towards success. Doesn't have to be every day. Like maybe when there is a certain milestone or significant achievement, right? Then you have to recognize the guys that put it together.
Yeah.
So that's a part of also affirming them and building them up.
Mm.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've always kind of done for myself is throughout the year, every time there's a small little achievement or someone said a good comment about a work that I've done, I try and jot it down. And so that at the end of the performance review, I would say, this is what I've done this year. And Crispina was saying, it helps the manager to also know how far you have come along, how far you've progressed. I think from a manager's point of view is to have these regular check-ins that are authentic, that you are very intentional about it so that at the end of the year, it doesn't come off as a shock.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think for me, that was like my biggest take home from this conversation.
I also felt like I learned something. I was enjoying the moment where Crispina was really wondering, how do I break that news? And then she's such a nice person. So and it reminds me
I'm
of so many
nice person,
people,
though.
So many managers. We are non-confrontational, but yet we got to maybe learn a little bit about how do we do that feedback? How do we give that area of improvement objectively? Because I think people want to know. They want to know how to improve. They want to know how to do better.
Yeah. I mean, this is what we expect of our bosses, right?
Mm-hmm.
That they recognize all the good things that we do. And they're honest about the things that they want us to get better at without being mean or putting somebody down.
On that note, thank you so much, Crispina, for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed being on the other side of the table.
Surprisingly.
Yeah, being asked all these questions.
Less stressful. It was wonderful. Thank you. Thank you, Gerald.
Thank you. Thank you.
Each week, I'll pick a work-related question and put Gerald on the hot seat. So I've had about 4 bosses so far, and you'll ask me how many of them I meet socially. I would say 2, which isn't so bad, I think. It means I like my bosses and they like me, I suppose. In fact, I would consider these 2 to be my friends. But I'm always reminding myself that they are still people I report to at work, and I like to try and keep some boundaries. So my question to you today, Gerald, is how do I draw healthy boundaries if my boss is also my friend?
It's a great question because we definitely have to be prepared for bloodlines.
Okay.
I mean, it's not so straightforward.
Mm.
There's so many situations where you are wondering to yourself, should I treat this relationship as a boss and subordinate one or a friend one?
Okay.
So I think the first thing is really to be aware of the different roles and expectations attached to each role and to know when each role should be more prominent in the different situations.
Yeah, that's kind of hard, right? So is it like a physical thing? Like if I'm in the office, I need to know that there's a subordinate employer, you know, dynamics here.
Yeah, I think that environment plays a part because there are people in the environment that are also evaluating their relationship. So you have to be mindful of how others may view your relationship with your boss. You can't go to, for example, your boss's room and then start to spend a long time inside there. And people also are wondering what's happening, you know, in that room. You know, you look like having a party and then drinks and all.
Yeah.
So the perception there, and even over discussions, right? Like when certain bosses, if you disagree with your boss and the way you say it, may seem to undermine their responsibility or even their authority.
Okay. Right?
And then this may cause your boss to feel uncomfortable in front of your other colleagues. That's where we have to maintain a certain emotional distance from our boss so that we can still remain objective and also allow some fairness to exist. So as you're looking into those relationships and what's happening, it's not so confusing. It's pretty clear that, you know, your boss is doing his boss thing.
Okay.
And then as a friend, maybe you should put your friend expectations a little bit aside.
Okay.
Yeah. So that this somehow would allow you to maintain that relationship a lot better.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in the workplace, what sort of topics should I avoid having with my friend?
Okay. This is really important because I think these are the danger zones. Yeah. They're easy pitfalls that people might get into. So any conversation regarding rewards, incentives, money, promotions, I think these are the ones that you want to be a bit careful. For example, as a subordinate and your boss is telling you things like that, you might want to excuse yourself because sometimes even listening to it may implicate you or may even influence the way you see things, right? And if this gets out of hand, gets out that you know, then it will not be so good for you and even for your boss.
Mm.
So learn to recognize this conversation and say, okay, look, I got to step out of this.
Mm.
Okay, you're telling me something about this person. I don't think I'm the right person to share this with, so I'm going to step out. Or you could stop.
But sometimes even if you remove yourself from that situation, other people might assume you are privy to that knowledge because that person is your friend. right? So how then do I deal with it?
That's really tough because it's really based on how people would see you. And this is why maybe the earlier point about your behavior in the office, in the workspace, that actually helps them to connect and to decide in their minds how close is that relationship.
Mm.
You know, so if today there is, for example, you could be going for lunches together, and if you just go exclusively, right, then that creates a certain perception. But if you involve people, you ask, hey, who wants to go for lunch together, you know, so then that makes it look more open.
Okay.
Right? Like it's not an exclusive relationship. If you go for holidays, and I know some people go with holidays with bosses,
your friends,
right?
And yep. That happens to be your boss.
You could invite people around, you can invite them. And one thing, maybe not post
it's like
so
having
much.
A chaperone.
I mean the relationship can be enjoyed by everybody.
Okay.
You know, the friendship. I mean, you're not just saying your boss is only friends with you, but maybe there are other people there as well.
Mm,
right?
Mm,
yeah.
Okay. I think these are very, very helpful tips for anyone who's listening in and your boss happens to be your friend. We hope you have found this conversation helpful to you. Let us know if you have any feedback. Again, we are on our usual CNA social channels, or you can leave a comment on Spotify. Remember to send us your burning questions to Gerald for next week, and I'll help you ask them. The team behind the Work It podcast is Joanne Chan, Janaini Johari, and Saya Win. This is Tiffany.
And I'm Gerald.
Until next week.
Bye.